Hello, we are Angela Benjamin
and David J. Lilly,
and we are both jewellery designer makers who spend every day surrounded by shiny things.
We are both passionate about jewellery
and love learning all we can about jewellery making and sharing what we've learned with you.
Perhaps you're a jewellery lover or creative type, or spend your days at the bench like we do.
Whichever it is, we hope you'll enjoy our sparkling chit-chat, our silly stories, and our thoughts on living a creative and slightly dusty life.
With a few laughs along the way.
You can find our podcasts on all your favourite apps, including, of course, the biggies, Apple, Spotify, and Chrome Podcasts.
So if you want to know who we are and share our passion for all that glitters, then stay with us for the next 30-ish minutes.
This is
Ange
and David with Little Gems on Jewellery
and Life.
Hi, Ange. How are you?
Hello, David. I'm great, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, really good. I am enjoying a sunny morning in Canada, which I can, as you can imagine, is hideous out here in the West Kootenays.
Well, I'm sure it can't be any worse than the weather we've had recently, although today it's absolutely glorious in London. I've had a day off, so I've been out and about enjoying the sunshine, and we've got 14 degrees and blue skies.
Fabulous. I have to say, it's exactly the same here, and I'm looking across Kootenay Lake from our Airbnb. And oh, I must apologise to everybody, all the listeners. This is late because we moved from the Okanagan to the West Kootenays last week, and I totally forgot that we were meant to be recording this podcast.
You abandoned me. Thank you.
I know. I'm terrible, aren't I? Thank you. You're too kind. You've had a holiday as well there in the sun, haven't you?
Yes, I had a lovely week away at the end of January to a little fishing town in Portugal on the East Algarve called Oleão. It was gorgeous. Blue skies, fresh sunshine. I wouldn't say it was sunbathing weather, but it was just lovely to see blue skies. And I took lots of pictures of colourful doors and tiles and, yeah, nice walking, good food, good wine, and came back feeling refreshed.
Fantastic. And that's really lovely, especially for this time of year, because one of the things we discovered in the Okanagan was that they, because it's a huge valley, they have this kind of cloud cover which comes in not above the mountains, but just probably about two-thirds of the way down, and it can stay for days. So what people do is they get in their cars and they go up to the mountains. One of them is called, one of them has a resort called Silver Star on it. And they go up there just to be above the cloud cover. And then you've got the blue skies and obviously and this time of year, all the white snow. And it looks absolutely stunning. Probably like similar to what you had in Portugal.
Sounds lovely. Yeah, it's amazing what colour does to lift the mood. I don't know about you, but I'm someone who craves it. And especially in winter, people always comment when they see me out and about and go, oh, you're colourful. But I feel that I compensate for the lack of colour around me by chucking lots of colour on my body. So like today, I had a bright yellow skirt and I've got a colourful head wrap. So yeah, it tends to make me feel better.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that. I mean, I have purchased new coats to come out here, knowing or in thinking it'd be really, really cold, and it's not as cold as expected, but they are kind of burnt orange color and bright orange color because that's my favorite color, and I just, you know, I love to wear it. And actually over here clothes tend to be more colorful than they are back home. You can get really lovely colors for men because men's colors tend to be kind of beige, blue, black, and sometimes kind of dark reds, but here you can get wonderful bright colors, and you see people dressed in bright colors. There was a guy out at the Lantern Festival we went to a couple of nights ago, and he had this bright yellow puffer coat on. I thought, that's fantastic to see a guy wearing color.
And so what else have you been up to since we last got together?
Well, quite a lot, I should say. We obviously spent a month in the Okanagan, and I spent a lot of that time at the Vernon Community Arts Centre, which was wonderful. They gave me free studio space to do as I wanted and were kind of itching for me to do something in stained glass because that's what they, you know, could provide in the way of facilities. They didn't have facilities for jewellery making, so I couldn't do any of that. But I had real fun working there, making a couple of things. I made a small panel that was inspired by the land surrounding Vernon in a kind of, well, it was abstract, but kind of mid-century modern kind of abstract feel to it. And that was really fun to do. That was rather than leaded, which is what I tend to work in when I'm doing stained glass. It was a copper foil panel. And it was fun to get back and doing that as well. And then I donated it to them to actually sell, because I thought, what am I going to do with a stained glass panel traveling around Canada for the next 3 months? So I did that. I had a really great time working with a group of people who have learning disabilities, through from being blind, and he made a little stained glass light catcher, through to people who are on the autistic spectrum and everything, excuse me, in between. There was one woman who was almost totally paraplegic, and but she could speak and she could move one arm, so she took part in what we were doing. And with the guy who was blind, it was the first time I'd actually worked with anybody like that, and I was guiding his hands when he was grinding the glass against the wheel so that he could take part and he could feel what he was doing. So we had six different groups. They each came for an hour and a half. So I had to come up with something that they could make in an hour and a half as well. So I had them cutting the glass, grinding the glass, putting the copper foil around each piece, and then I would solder it for them, because soldering is pretty dangerous when you know what you're doing. And when you don't know what you're doing and you've got an hour and a half to do it in, we thought that was just pushing the boundaries a bit far. So that was really fun. And I would very much like to do that again, because I got a great big kick out of seeing these people who, a lot of them have been told, no, they couldn't do this, it was too dangerous or too complicated, discovering that they could do it with minimal help. And we made little small sun catchers. They either made from 2, 3, or 4 pieces. And some of them went for the more complicated 4-piece. Some of them actually made 2 in that time as well. So that was fantastic. And I'm really pleased that they asked me to do that and get involved. And then the following week, I decided to make a lampshade, which I used to do a lot when I was making stained glass and hadn't done for probably about 15 years, because I'd found a whole load of globs. Globs are literally, you know, pebbles of glass, from anything from the size of about 20p piece up to a bit bigger than a £2 coin. And so I made a shade with that. I put it on a lamp base that I bought here in Walmart, of all places. And that was fun. And again, I donated that to them so that they could sell it and get some money for the actual center. And then the final weekend, I ran 2 leaded stained glass workshops, the same as I would do back here, or back where you are, I should say, in the UK. And that was great. I had 6 people on each, which was the maximum number they would normally have in a workshop of that type, which was great because that's a nice number. I can handle that when everybody gets loads of attention. And we had 12 people all making things that were stunning and very different from each other, which has always happened. So the Vernon Community Arts Centre was an amazing place to be. We met, I mean, Chris popped in on days as well, and we met loads of people there, and they were all so uber friendly and wanting to be helpful when it comes to the RNIP, which is we're trying to use to obviously access immigration into Canada. We were invited out to parties and drinks and games nights, and we actually spent 2 afternoons working with Gail, who used to be the executive director, and she resigned from that back in 2021 to make vision boards, because she loved vision boarding. So we each did a vision board based on something around being in Canada, and that was really fun to do. And they were just small enough to fit in my suitcase. So we've got them, because they're traveling around with us. So that was Vernon, or I should say that was the Okanagan, or that part of it. I also discovered an amazing museum and art gallery, which was called the Caetani House, Caetani House. And it's a long story, so I won't go into all of it, but the artwork there are 47 pieces, and some pieces are multiple pieces of work that Saveva, Sveva Caetani, who was Italian, created in response to having been locked up with her mother to live for 25 years and basically not being allowed out of the house until her mother died. And the art is just incredible. I love it. So yeah, look up Sveva Caetani, Caetani, or Caetani House in Vernon. There are some stuff on their website, but and I only saw 11 of the pieces because they don't have the space to show them all. But it was a really cute little museum based in the house that Sveva used to live in, and then they've got this art gallery on the side. So those were the major takes from Vernon itself, and the people were just delightful. And there was a jeweler there. I mean, there were four jewelry shops in this town of about 30,000 people, which was amazing. And they were what I would tend to call kind of mainstream jewelry. So they tended to be on the fine jewelry side rather than the art jewelry. Nothing there but really grabbed to me. But I discovered Susan on Instagram, of course. So I'll give her details out a bit later. But she and I connected, and Chris and her husband as well. And we had a great time. Really lovely woman. And we met some people in other towns around, all of whom were the friendliest, most accommodating people we've ever met. And we know we love Canadians because they are so generous. But this lot were just completely, I don't know how to explain it. They were wanting to be as helpful, as friendly as they could. They were the people who you always wish you're going to meet when you need a friend, because they bend over backwards without being asked. They're looking to help you. If they think that person needs help, they'll come and ask, "Are you lost? Can we help? Do you need something? Are you looking for something?" And this happened on so many occasions from people we have never met before and have never seen again, because they were just there to be.
So, do you think that Vernon is somewhere you'd want to settle then so far for places?
Yeah, quite possibly. Because, I mean, the town itself is or was a fairly, they themselves referred to as a blue collar town. But it's also trying to make itself the arts and cultural centre of the Okanagan, which is this large area which has got loads of kind of grapevines and fruit farms and so forth in it. And they seem to be doing really well with what they're doing. So yes, it could easily be somewhere that we would enjoy living. This sounds ridiculous, but in Canada, it's not the most picturesque of areas compared to where we are now. And where we are now in the West Kootenays is just ridiculously picturesque. It kind of takes the best of kind of Norway and Switzerland and throws it in, mixes it up, and makes it bigger. I mean, here, and because there are fewer people, I mean, compared to Europe, there are so few people in Canada. There's something like 30 million in the entire country. And where we are in British Columbia, you can fit the UK five times into the whole area of British Columbia. And there are only something like 5 million people living in this area. So just there's a lot of space around and a lot of animals. I mean, we've seen elk and moose and bald eagles. We haven't seen any bears yet, which is a good thing. Well, because there are grizzly bears around where we're staying at the moment. And we don't, well, they should be hibernating still. So yeah, we don't want to bump into a grizzly bear, that's for sure. Black bears, brown bears, fine, they'll run away. Grizzlies will run towards you. Yeah, and you can't run fast enough or climb trees fast enough to get out of their way.
Blimey, so that'd be it. That would literally be your death sentence then, if you sort of encountered a bear.
Could be. You just have to, you always, if you're going out into the forests, you take bear spray with you. You take these little things that kind of like kind of banger, bear bangers, they call them, and they make a loud bang. The idea is that it stops the bear. The bear spray will, 99 times out of 100, from what I gather, stop the bear, because it's really, really strong. The oil that you get in some of the strongest chilies, basically, and
Right.
it's a spray. So you spray it at the bear, and it's such a violent sense for them because they can smell so powerfully that they just run because they just have to get away from it. So that's the way that you kind of, try and avoid an entanglement with a bear.
Well, I've learned something today,
There you go.
Mr. Lee. I'm not sure it's going to be much use to me on the underground in London, but hey, you never know.
Well, Ealing Common is not the safest place, let's say, let's face it.
Exactly. It's a jungle out there, literally.
Yeah, so now we're in the West Kootenays, and the West Kootenays are beautiful. There are far fewer people. The biggest town is Nelson, and that has about 11,000 in it. We've been up to Caslow, where we have a friend, a new friend, two new friends, and just under 1,000 people. Some people call it the city of Kaslo. Other people call it the village of Kaslo. And I think village is more apt for the number of people in it.
Sounds very quaint.
It is. It is very quaint. I've not had an opportunity to really connect with the art scene here the way I did in Bernard. From what I can tell, the art scene tends to be more kind of performance arts here. There is a gallery in Nelson, which we shall head into later this week. We've not had an opportunity to yet. We've been kind of doing a lot of driving around and seeing other parts of the West Kootenays, you know, where if we were going to live in this area, because we got a job in this area, where would we want to live? Do we want to live in one of the towns? Do we want to live outside one of the towns? And what's available? Because there isn't a lot of property that's actually available to buy or rent out here. So it's just getting a real kind of feel for ideally where we'd like to be. And if we can't feel the ideal, what is going to be something that actually we're going to be happy with? So, yeah, we're having lots of fun out here. That's for sure. Not much jewellery making.
I was going to say, but it sounds like you're still keeping your hand in creatively. I mean, you talking about, you know, teaching people who have, you know, different abilities to yourself, you sounded really animated, and I can relate to that. I must admit, when I'm teaching some of my workshops and someone comes with a particular design idea and you're trying to create it, even though they've not necessarily got the skills, as makers, we have to think new things, and that's quite a nice challenge to have, and it sounds like something you've enjoyed.
Very much. It was the second day that I got to the Art Centre when Quinn, who runs this group called Joining Hands, came up and said, oh, will you do these workshops? And so I said, of course, without thinking about how the hell am I going to do a stained glass workshop for people with learning disabilities in an hour and a half. But that was half the challenge.
No, it sounds exactly. That's, you know, I think that sounds really, really challenging, but also rewarding.
Very definitely. So talking about challenging and rewarding, you've thrown yourself back into your learning. How is that going?
Yes. It's pretty full on at the moment. Since I got back from holiday, I've been at one of the Morley sites pretty much every day of the week. So I'm doing lots of jewellery classes, but I've also started doing photography this term, which has been great. I'm doing some fashion and portrait photography. It's really challenging for me, but good in that it helped me to dig out my old Canon camera, which I've had for ages, Canon DSLR, which hadn't been out of the bag for at least 3 years. But within an hour of the first class, which was 3 hours, I felt so much more relaxed with the settings, when to use, you know, which setting for what sort of lighting. And it's not that I'm looking to suddenly change careers, but it's just having the confidence to take pictures of my jewellery on a body without thinking, oh gosh, how's that going to look on my website or on Instagram or whatever. So it's just lovely learning a different skill. And jewellery wise, I've been doing lots of lovely stone setting courses. So setting stones of different shapes using gravers, which is, I find it really relaxing because it's so different to the way that I work. Usually all my gems are set with bezels and quite large. But in the stone setting class that I'm doing, we're using cast settings and having to use a graver to cut out the seat, get it exactly the right shape before we actually set the stone, make sure everything's nice and level. So it's lovely and precise, and it's quite meditative. I'm not saying I'm suddenly going to change careers and become a stone setter. I couldn't imagine doing it all day, every day. But it's lovely to learn and also to appreciate that, you know, that is a skill in itself. And I can see why people would outsource that part of their work, because unless you know what you're doing, and if you want a certain aesthetic for your jewellery, if you want it to look perfect, I know some people, their settings are quite rustic, and personally, I like that to a degree, but it depends on the piece that you're making. So it's nice to know that I have an appreciation of that skill, and if I had several hours, I could set a stone well. Compared to a trained stone setter who could probably do it in 10 minutes. I also went back to basics and did a wonderful soldering masterclass, which I would recommend to anyone. Again, it was part of my scholarship, so I feel really lucky that I had the opportunity to do it. And it was with a lovely lady called Frieda Monroe. And Frieda is a jeweler in her own right, but she also does bench. She does bench jewelry work, I think she said, with Alex Monroe, the jeweler. And she teaches at Central St. Martin. But it was great just learning some soldering techniques that I basically didn't know. And, you know, banging out soldering in a way that was much more secure, much more sleek. And yeah, it's brilliant. I would highly recommend if anyone ever gets the opportunity to do that. How do you feel about soldering, David?
It's my nemesis, I always think, soldering.
Well, that's how I felt before I did this course. I felt like, you know, I've been making jewelry for all these years, get to the block, have to solder, and it's like, oh my God, now that feeling has gone. And it's amazing. It's just little tweaks to your techniques and a few different tips. And yeah, it just ups your confidence with soldering. So there you go. Maybe when you're back in London, we can have a little soldering afternoon.
Oh,
tea
absolutely.
And soldering.
That's it. I'll bring the cakes, you bring the solder. There you go.
There you go. Sorted. There's a date.
So if you were to give people one single tip when it comes to soldering from what you've learned, what would it be?
Yes. Oh my goodness, one tip. Mix your flux to the right consistency.
And how do you know what the right consistency is?
Well, you don't want it runny and watery. So I don't know about anyone else, but often when I'm in a hurry, I'll mix my flux and it's looking not quite. I was always taught that it should be a yogurty consistency. But over the years, if I'm in a hurry, I know that I don't always quite get it that way, and it becomes a bit less viscous and might be too lumpy or too runny. Either one of those, and your solder, your pallions aren't going to flow. And so that's one thing that I found just from doing that masterclass has improved my soldering no end.
Right.
So yeah, that's my takeaway.
Excellent. Good. Thank you for that.
Welcome.
So you're learning setting, you're learning photography, you've done some soldering and mastered that now. What's the next thing that's coming up with this
next
scholarship?
Coming up, what have I got coming up? I'm doing really lovely jewellery workshops. One of the great things with Morley is that they've got three sites. So they've got three separate colleges, Morley, Waterloo, Kensington and Chelsea. Chelsea tends to do more of the visual arts like photography. But at Kensington, they've also got a lovely jewellery studio where it's a workshop setting. So I have a lovely tutor called Jenny, who, again, is a jeweller in her own right, but also teaches through UAL and at Morley. And it's more of an open class, so you can do your own projects, but she has projects that you can do. But I just love the fact that I'm meeting lots of other jewellers at various stages in their careers, and interacting, learning, getting feedback. And it's just the luxury of having time to perfect my designs. Mm-hmm. I'm also really enjoying drawing. Shock horror. I'm sitting on the tube and sketching all the time, coming up with, yeah, and it's lovely to be in a position where I can do that, but also in the headspace where I can see. One of the main things that I'm learning from working through the scholarship and going to different classes and also making my collection is to expand pieces, so that rather than when I first started making jewelry, I just make pieces that I like based on the process of making. Now I've developed a way of thinking whereby I will design a piece, but then look at ways that I can change that design to make a different piece, which could potentially develop into a collection. And that's something I never really did before. I would design a bracelet based on one shape and leave it at that, and then a ring based on one shape and leave it at that. So I think my work to date has been quite eclectic. Although I've been told that I have a style, I've never actually had, you know, cohesive collections as such. But through, you know, doing the scholarship and also working through my collection, I can see that there are ways that I can develop that way of working to make, you know, new collections in the future. And I think as a jeweler, particularly in today's climate, that would be financially more viable rather than making lots of one-off pieces.
Yeah, I think that's a very sensible idea. You know what? I have no idea how long we've been talking, but I suspect we've been yakking away for well past the time. So I suppose we should move on to who we are going to invite people to go look at on Instagram this month, okay. This fortnight, whatever.
Well, I don't actually have anyone in particular, but what I would recommend, if any of the listeners are in London, I had a day off today and had the pleasure of going to the V&A to see the Africa Fashion Exhibition.
Oh, wow.
Which was amazing. There were some jewellery pieces in there. One of the jewellers whose work was on display, she doesn't actually have an Instagram link, but I did Google her. And her name is Teresa Chiarlo. Spell that. That's TheresiaKyalo. And she's one of these super talented people who, she's actually a lawyer, a designer. She's got lots of hats, but she designs for Beyonce, you know, that sort of thing. But she had some gorgeous wearable sculptural pieces in the exhibition. But if anyone gets a chance to go and see the Africa Fashion Exhibition, I would highly recommend it.
Cool. Okay. Hopefully it might be on by the time we get back, because I'd love to go see that myself. So my recommendation is going to be the lady I met in Vernon, who is Susan Kun, spelt K-U-N. She's Hungarian. She came over to Canada in 1986, and she started working as a fine jeweler in Vancouver. She worked for a person whose creations have inspired me so much, which is Tony Cavalti. So Tony Cavalti was a Swiss Italian who came over to Canada, and he started working as a jeweler in the mid-60s, I think it was. And very much, there's lots of things that he made that you would love as much as I love, in that they are just incredibly kind of powerfully angular. And apparently he was quite a tyrant to work for, but Susan got to work for him. So she told me some of the stories, which I won't divulge. Let's keep the myth as it is. Susan's work is beautiful as well. She is more fine jewelry. That's what she does. But her Instagram is susan.kun, K-U-N.1. But we'll put all these links, obviously, in the show notes. But her work is gorgeous. When I met her, she was obviously wearing all her jewellery. And she'd made a ring for her husband, so she had him wear that as well. But it was just lovely to see. And we just got on like a house on fire. She was such fun and a very, very talented jeweller. She sells her work all over Canada in a variety of different places. So that's mine. We're done. So I will see you in a few weeks this time. We should put a date in the diary before I forget all about it and I'm la 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 through Canada and not noticing the time go by.
Oh, definitely. But it's been lovely catching up. Good to see you.
You too. I missed you.
Oh, shucks. I'll see you again soon.
I will see you again very soon. You take care. Lots of love.
All right. Take care, lovey. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode and come back to us another couple of weeks for the next part. In the meantime, also thanks to Alfie Amadeus for the amazing track, Octopi, which is our theme music. See you soon. Bye-bye.